Okay, we're beginning on the top of Samach Zayin Amud Aleph. We're continuing with the statements of Rava. Rava made a statement that, first of all, Pshita Lei de Miruach Hekdesh Poter. When it comes to Miruach that's done in the hands of Hekdesh, that for sure is Poter. With regards to Miruach Ovei Kuchavim, we saw Machloket Tanaim with regards to that. And also we saw the Balei HaTosafot, Rashi, the Rabbeinu Gershom all discussed this issue as to what that relationship between that machloket is to the machloket with regards to whether an Ovid Kochavim has a kinyan, lafkiya midei, trumot masrot in Eretz Yisrael. Tosafot discusses what the relationship is or why maybe their positions are correlated. And now we move on to the other aspects, which are the chala, Gilgul Hekdesh Poter. Again, Rava says that when it comes to Gilgul Hekdesh, everybody agrees that it's patur mi-chala. It's not, because we have a Mishnah. Iddisha yisata ad shelo gilgila. She was makdish the dough before she made it into dough. Ubidata, and then redeemed it before the Gilgul, and then only afterwards kneaded it. Chayevet, that's chayevet in chala, because the kneading was done in the hands of the woman. Mishi gilgila, if she already did the kneading, ubidata, and then was makdishit and redeemed it, chayevet, because, again, the gilgul, the kneading was done in the hands of the woman. It also is chayav, because in both those cases, the gilgul was done via the head joke. On the other hand, ikdisha achalo gilgala, the gilgala gizbar, if she was makdishit before the kneading, and then the kneading was done by the gizbar, the treasurer of Hekdesh, or any of his proxies, and then she only redeemed it after the kneading was done, after the chiyuv chala, tura. In that case, she is tura, shebishat chovata, it's ab tura. Because at the moment that the obligation devolved upon this item to be chayevet in chala, it was not in the hands of someone who is chayevet. It was in the hands of Hekdesh, and Hekdesh is patur mi chala. Bayrava, gilgul oved kochavim mai. So here, out of the four cases, Rava says three of them are clear about, that miruach, Hekdesh is poter. Miruach, obdei kuchavim, machloket tanaim. Gilgul hekdesh, poter. But, gilgul obdei kuchavim, I don't know what the din is, what's the din? Mitna atnan, because we have a Mishnah. Ger shenitgayer, vaita lo isa, nase ad shelo nitgayer, patur. If you have a ger who converts, and he has dough, that was already made or kneaded before he converted, patur. Mishin nitgayer, once he converts, and then he does the work on the dough, chayav in chala. Safek, if he's uncertain as to whether it was needed before or after he converted, chayav. Ha man katani la, who is the author of this position? Divrei hakohi, it is according to everyone. Bafilu Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yehuda, even Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yehuda from the previous daf, mechayev chatam, that are mechayev over there by miruach obet kochavim, Patrei Hocha. Over here, they say you are Patur by Gilgul Oved Kochavim. Hatam Hu Dichtiv, because over there, by the Miruach of the Dagan, it says Digancha, Digancha, Yitera. The word Digancha appears. Rashi writes it first two times, but then the Tzon Kodoshim corrects within Rashi and says three times. And if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he also says Tlat Digancha Tive. It's written three times in Sefer Dvarim. The first of which is in Dvarim Yudbet Pasuk Yudzayin, where it says, Lo tuchal lechol bisharecha, masar digancha, veti roshcha, veitzarecha, o bechorecha, bekarcha, vetzonecha, bechol nidarecha, shetidor, v'nidvatecha, trumat yadecha. So over there you see the word digancha. Tosafot over here asks about why don't you just use the three words here, digancha, tiroshcha, veitzarecha, which are all forms of truma, and then you could have the three miyutin that are derived here from the gancha, the gancha, the gancha, from the gancha, tiroshcha, v'yitzarecha. In the end, Tosafot, even though he suggests that might be a possibility, in the end he says, perusha kutra sikar. Rashi says is the right way to explain it. The question of why Tosafot rejects that view, but it might be that you're looking for specific words that are repeated rather than thematically the same idea being repeated, because the Gan, Tirosh, and Yitzhar are different forms of Truma, even though, again, they're all Truma. That's the first time we have it. The next Pasuk is found in Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Chav Gimel. V'chaltim pnei Hashem lokecha b'makom asher yivchar, l'shakein shmosham, masar digancha, Tiroshcha v'yitzarecha ubechorot v'karcha v'tzonecha l'man tilmad yirat Hashem l'kecha kol hayamim. So there again it says deganfa. And the third time it appears is in Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Dalet. It says, Reshit deganfa tiroshcha v'yitzarecha Reshit geizonecha titen lo. You see the word deganfa appears three times. We're going to go with that girsa. And therefore you have the first deganfa comes to exclude Hekdesh. And that's why everybody agreed that Meiruach Hekdesh is Patur. The second Degancha comes to exclude an Oveid Kochavim. But then you have a third Degancha, which would then exclude an Oveid Kochavim again. And that's what the Gemara says over here. Have a Miut Achar Miut. You have two Miutim in a row. Vein Miut Achar Miut Elolera both. Only comes to be inclusionary that Afilu Oveid Kochavim. Even the Oveid Kochavim's Meiruach is included. So that is the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda's position that the Dagan of an Oveid Kochavim is Chayav. That's because you have one Dagan to eliminate Hekdesh, and Rashi notes over here, Mistavra, that Oveid Kochavim you would include, and Hekdesh you would exclude, Shekein Nechal Belo Pijon Kishel Yisrael. The reason it makes more sense to say Hekdesh is Patur, and the Nachri is Chayav, is because Hekdesh you need to redeem even, to get to your possession. The Goy's produce is going to be accessible even without any pidyon over here, without any redemption. So given that, if we have a choice to exclude one item and include another, we're going to exclude Hekdesh, include Oveid Kochavim. Since you have three Deganchas, the first one will be a Miut for Hekdesh, the second one for Miut for Oveid Kochavim, but you have a third Miut, which is also Oveid Kochavim, we're saying Miut Acha Miut El Rabot. That's the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, why they say Meiruach and Oveid Kochavim is Chayav. But that means, over here, by the case of Chala, Trei Zimne Arisotechem Ketiv. The word Arisotechem only appears twice. Chad Arisotechem Kedei Isatchem. One, Arisotechem comes to teach you that it has to be Kedei Isa. In order to be Chayav, there's a minimum Shi'ur that you need in order to be Chayav. And that is Kedei Isat Hamidbar, which we'll see on the top of the next Amud, is five quarters and a little more of a Kav. V'chad Arisotechem V'lo Isat Oveid Kochavim. And the other Arisotechem comes to exclude the Isa of an Oveid Kochavim and an Isa of Hekdesh. Now first of all, as Tosafot points out, that when they have the second Arisotechem, it should be in the reverse order. It should first exclude Hekdesh and then Oveid Kochavim. And then so the girsa really should be Echad Arisotechem V'lo Isat Hekdesh V'lo Isat Oveid Kochavim. That's number one. Number two is that the word girsaot that had the Trei Arisotechem come to teach you, one to exclude Hekdesh, one to exclude Oveid Kochavim. You can see that in Divrei Matkil of Tosfot, Chad Arisotechem V'lo Isat Oveid Kochavim, Chad Arisotechem V'lo Isat Hekdesh. But what you don't have over here is a third Arisotechem to make it a Miut Acha Miut or Rabot. And therefore, even Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda would agree over here that the Isa is Patur Michala, if it was done, or the Gilgul was done by an Oveid Kochavim. And the Tosfot points this out, that sometimes we require two psukim, one to exclude Oveid Kochavim, and one to exclude Hekdesh. Other times, we have a single one miut, and that single miut already excludes both an Oveid Kochavim and Hekdesh. It says, V'yesh lomar, the kevin the galilan hocha gabi chala, the Hekdesh Oveid Kochavim shavin, since there is a girsa over here, and again, the Balei Tosfot's girsa was that one of them was to exclude Oveid Kochavim, one of them was to exclude Hekdesh. So he says here, by Chala, it tells you that both an Oveid Kochavim and Hekdesh are excluded, one from each of those words. Then that is Mar'eh on other places that Oveid Kochavim and Hekdesh are Shavin, Hu Adin B'chol Duchta. And therefore, in any other place, we only need one Miut to exclude both of them, because we learn from Chala that they both have the same din. But that would be one tzad of Rabba's Safek, that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir would agree by Chala, even though they don't agree by Dagan. Odilma, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Tanila. Or maybe Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yossi are the authors of that Mishnah, the Kapatre. Just like they were poter by Meiruach Oveid Kochavim, they're also poter here by Gilgul Oveid Kochavim. Aval Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Gamrei Reshit Reshit Mehotam. They learn out Reshit Reshit Ligzera Shava, Reshit Degancha, and Reshit Arisotechem. Reshit Degancha referring to Truma, Reshit Arisotechem to Chala. And the correlation would then teach you, just like by the Dagan, Miruach HaGoy is Chayav, so too by the Chala, Miruach HaGoy is Chayav, even though you only have two Miutim and not three Miutim by Chala. So he's uncertain. Amar Rava, so what does Rava do with this uncertainty? Hey Rava, the Achsei Bechilma, says, Hiratzon, that I should have a dream that tells me whether it's Divrei HaKol, or whether it's just the Shita of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. Very interesting method for finding out how the halacha goes. How did Amar Rava? Then Rava says, it's not clear here whether Rava actually saw it in a dream, or Rava just logically came to this conclusion, even without seeing it in a dream. Manda mar meiruach oved kochavim poter. The one who says that meiruach of oved kochavim is poter, gilgal oved kochavim poter. That's Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yossi, who believe meiruach goy is poter. So too the gilgal, the kneading of the goy will be poter from chala. Manda mar meiruach oved kochavim enu poter. The one who says that the oved kochavim's meiruach doesn't help you out, that's Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, who say meiruach oved kochavim is chayav. Their shitot are parallel. Both cases, according to this, you'll be chayav for meruach oved kochavim and for gilgul oved kochavim. And if you're poter by meruach oved kochavim, you're also going to be poter by gilgul. Their positions will be consistent between the two areas. That's Rava's conclusion. We're going to challenge it in a second. Now, what is interesting over here is the definition of Meruach Oved Kochavim different than Gilgul Oved Kochavim? Generally, what we've said until now is Meruach Oved Kochavim is that the Goy owns it, and if he owns it during that critical moment or that critical period of Meruach HaKri, that is Poteret. And similarly, by Gilgul of the Chala, if the Goy owns it at that critical moment when the kneading is done, that is Poteret from the Chiyuv Chala. So it all has to do with ownership at that time. We saw that example at the beginning of today's daf with regards to Hekdesh. When it was in the possession of Hekdesh at that critical moment, that makes you patur. But if it's in the hands of a Yisrael, and it happens to be that a Goy is doing it, that won't change anything, or vice versa. If it's owned by the Goy and the Jew is doing the Meruach HaKri, that doesn't matter. It's not relevant who's doing the Meruach HaKri or who's doing the kneading. Ownership is the most important factor, and that's all that matters. That's a similar way that Rashi is learning this in the Balei HaTosafot. But interesting enough, if you look in the Mishita Mikubetzet over here, he brings an alternative view. He says, Alma de Meruach Oved Kochavim to Poter, Afilu Bitvuat Yisrael. When the Meruach is done by a non-Jew, it's Poter, even if it's owned by a Jew. V'teima Maishna Migilgul. Why is that different than the Gilgul, the kneading of Oved Kochavim? Da masim b'chol yom. We know every day, the Gilgul, Oved Kochavim, ainu poter b'isa Yisrael. Even though we have non-Jews kneading the dough, that doesn't change the fact that you're chayav in chala. So why is it by chala? It's determined by ownership. And at this suggestion of the Shita Mikubetzet, by meruach hakri, it is determined not by ownership, but by who processes it. Who does the meruach hakri? Says Vayesh Lamar, Tahocha Gami Meruach Tiv Diguncha Velo Digun Oved Kochavim. The miut that is used by Meruach is Dagan. Digun is the action of basically Meruach HaKri. It's putting it into a pile and then smoothing out the pile. So therefore, it is telling you, your Digun, your action, your doing of the Meruach HaKri is what is Mechayev. Someone else does it. If the Hekdesh does it, if the Oved Kochavim does it, that would be poter. Avahotam, on the other hand, by the case of dough, it doesn't say miktiv gilgulcha, below gilgul oved kochavim, only your kneading and not the kneading of the non-Jew. Rather, it says arisotachem ktiv. Whether it's your arisa, is it your isa, or is it not your isa? And therefore, the Shita Mikubetzet bifurcates the din and says that with regards to chala, it all is determined by ownership. And that's because the miut is arisotachem. By Meruach, it's all about who did the Meruach. It's not about ownership. It's about who did that process. And that's because it says, the Gancha, below Digun Oved Kochavim. So one of them speaks to the action. The other one speaks to the ownership. And therefore, the Shita Mikubetzet has the Shita that says that it is different between Meruach, Hakri, and Chalat. Which is very interesting to note. Until now, we've read it, and the way it seems that the Rishonim, like Rashi and the Balei Tosafot read it, is that the two are correlated, and they both have to do with ownership, not having to do with who is actually doing the process. And there are a whole slew of Rishonim in the Gemara and Kiddushin who believe not only is that true by the issue of Chala and Isa, but it's also true by the issue of Tumot and Masrot. And they believe that both by Meruach of Decree and the Gilgul HaIsa, that only thing that matters is who does it, not who owns it. Now there are Takanot Chachamim, Gzeret Chachamim, depending on who owned it, when they owned it, and all sorts of factors that the Rishonim discussed there in Kiddushin, but they, like the Shita Mekubetzet over here, but in both areas think that it's not about ownership, but rather about who does the processing at that moment. So now the Gemara is going to challenge this assumption of Robo that the two are correlated. Edvei Robo, Fopo, the Robo. Oveku Chavim, Shifrish, Peter Chamor. If a non-Jew separated out a Peter Chamor, Rashi Oveku claims, Shifrish said the Pidyon Peter Chamor. He took out a set to redeem the Peter Chamor. Shinolad lo bioto Oveku Chavim. That was born to him while he was a non-Jew. What's clear from Rashi is that this is a convert. The convert now is doing the mitzvah, but he's doing the mitzvah on an animal that was born to him while he was a goy. That would help explain why, in a second, we're going to see that we want to rectify the situation. Because if he's a ger, then we want to make sure that everything he's given is done properly. He's mistaken in his assumptions about what happened. But if he was a complete goy, over here it sounds like we wouldn't rectify it, we just let him do it. Although, he could read it, and that's the way others, we'll see in a second, maybe the Bayit Tosafot read it, that even if it was an Oved Kochavim, we would say the same thing. But Rashi says he redeemed it with a seh, or a chala, or he had chala taken off, something that he won, he was an Oved Kochavim. Modim oto shu patur. We tell him that you really are patur. Chalato ne'achelet lezarim. The chala can be eaten by non-kohanim, because it's not really chala. Peter Chamor, gozeiz v'oved bo. And the Peter Chamor, you can shear it, you can do whatever you want with it, because it is chulin legamre. There is no kiddush that took place over here because it wasn't necessary. So again, if it's a ger, it might make sense why we're telling him that it's not necessary. If it's a goy and he gives it, what's the big deal? If we keep it, the kohen keeps it, what's the issue with regards to a goy? Although the shach suggests that there is still a problem with a goy, because the goy will see zarim eating it, and he'll also come to a mistaken impression that these items are not restricted only to kohanim. Either way, the problem is that you might have people make mistakes about what's being done with these items, since it's not really chala, since it's not really a seh, the seh that was being podeh, the peter chamor, we want to make sure that it's known that it's chulin, and that we tell him that it's patur, so that he knows that if a zarim are eating it, or if he wants it returned, that's fine. Now Rashi claims that the peter chamor over here is a case where it's redeemed by a seh. Tosafot does not like that explanation because the seh that you use to redeem a peter chamor is chulin legamre. If it's chulin legamre, then what do you have to worry about? Gozeiz v'oved. The Bayit Tosafot say that it's not that they gave him the seh, but rather he handed him the peter chamor. He didn't give a seh, but rather he was hifrish peter chamor, which is a little strange language of hifrish peter chamor. If you look in the Shita Mekubetzet, Od Yutet, he says, Uperisha lishna de ifrish tzad kasha according to Tosvot. Yesh lamar de ifish klomar shnit no the kohen. That he handed the peter chamor to the kohen. Va kohen chayav liftoto. And the kohen himself is chayav to redeem it because otherwise the peter chamor is asur bahana even to the kohen. And given that, then he needs to redeem it with a set. And that's what it means ifrish peter chamor. Because in that case you understand why the peter chamor is asur bahana. And why you have to let him know that it's not really a surba hana'ah, and that he's patur over here, because otherwise the kohen's going to use it, and he's going to think the peter chamor is not a surba hana'ah, or there's no problem using the peter chamor. Now, from this you see, Bahai Hai Tana, this Tana says, Meruach oveid kochavim, eno poter, v'gilgol oveid kochavim, poter. This Tana seems to indicate that when it comes to the Meruach, of an Oved Kochavim, it's not patur, whereas the Gilgul of an Oved Kochavim is patur. Because you see here, he says, Oved Kochavim, Pifish Peter Chamor, Vichala. Those are the two items that he says. Modim Otoshu Patur. You let him know he's patur. Implied in that are, if it was Truma, we wouldn't indicate that to him, we wouldn't tell him anything. That says that's because you think it's Chayav. So now you have Truma that's Chayav while you are a Goy, but then when you're a Goy, you're patur Mechala. That would go against Rava's contention that the two are correlated. that if you say that you are chayav by meruach, you're also chayav by chalal. Over here you see you're chayav by tuma, and you are patur by the gilgul by chalal. So that's a question on Rava. But oh, eitvei Ravina the Rava. Ravina also asked Rava, chalal tovei kochavim ba'aretz, utumato b'chutza la'aretz. If chalal from an ovei kochavim in Eretz Yisrael, or trumato b'chutza la'aretz, or truma that was mufrash in chutzaretz, modino toshu patur. Once again, you let him know that he is patur. The simple reading is that it's any goy that does this. We let him know. Chalato ne'achelet zarim. The chala can be eaten by zarim because it's not really mukdash. Utrumato eno midamat. And its truma doesn't cause, dimua doesn't cause, it gets mixed together with chulin. Or, in essence, it doesn't have a status of truma. Ha! From here again, you can infer trumato be'aretz asura umedamat. That's only truma in chutz la'aretz that he's patur from as an ovei kochavim, because there in chutz la'aretz, Yisrael is only chayav in truma midrabanan. So there, when the goy does it, we say that he is patur. But in Eretz Yisrael, where the Yisrael is chayav midoraita, then the ovei kochavim is chayav. From here it sounds like he's chayav midoraita, because the miruach of the ovei kochavim is not poterim. V'ha'etani tam ha'damar miruach ovei kochavim einu poter. Yes, gilgul ovei kochavim poter. Again, here in this brayta, you see miruach ovei kochavim is chayav, whereas gilgul of the ovei kochavim is patur. So Rava answers midrabanan. Now that obligation over there of truma in Eretz Yisrael is only a gzeira midrabanan. Gzeira mishum balei kisim. It has to do with the wealthy individuals. Rashi over here brings two interpretations as to what the problem of balei kisim are. The first of which is these are traders that are buying tvuah, that are buying grains from chamarim, from the haulers that are moving the grains from the field into the cities or into where they're going to sell it. And the individuals come along and they purchase it from these parties. And then they go ahead and sell it. So what we're afraid of over here is that if we allow him when he purchases it from a non-Jew to not take off masrot, then when a Jew buys it from a Jew, he's also going to be poter. So what we're afraid is that he thinks that buying it is what's making him patur. So when he buys it from the goy, he's patur. He'll think then, well, when I buy it from the Jew, I'm also patur. And that's not true. The difference is that miruach ovei kochavim is poter. Miruach Yisrael is obviously not poter. Now, this leaves aside the question of whether a purchaser is chayav in trumot masrot, maybe midaraita patur, midrabanan chayav. It leaves aside that machloket as to whether what the status of someone who purchases grains, whether they are chayav in trumot masrot. But assuming that they are, then the problem over here is he's going to confuse it. And you can see that in the Ravein of Gershom as well. Gzeir mishum balekisim bnei adam ashirim. They purchase quantities or large quantities of grain from Jews and non-Jews. And Zimnin, the Zavim Yisrael, the Chayav Maser. Sometimes he'll buy from a Jew where he really is Chayav. Ve'amar movi kochavim zavan. And he'll say, I bought it from a non-Jew. So Rashi says the problem is that he will buy from a non-Jew and be patur. So he'll assume when he buys from a Jew, he's also patur, and that's a mistake. Rabbeinu Gershom says we're worried about some more nefarious activity here, which is the fact that if he buys it from the goy, he's patur, then he'll end up buying it from a Jew and saying he bought it from a goy in order to make himself patur. So in order to avoid that problem, the Rabbanan came along and said, when you buy it from a goy, you're also chayav. But that's only midrabanan. Midoraita, the dinim are aligned, like Rava said. But even those that say you're patur from miruach goy, over here we're going to say you are chayav midrabanan because of this gzeira, as Rashi and Ben Gershom say. Rashi brings a second gzeira, which is the more well-known gzeira, which is the problem of if the individual has large tracts of land that he's harvesting, and then he finishes the harvest and he realizes he's going to have to give huge quantities of trumot to masrot, what he'll do is he'll sell the produce to a goy for that interim period of the chiyuv to masrot, which means that at the point of time in miruach hakri, he'll sell it to the goy. He'll do that in the hands of the goy, and then he'll buy it back afterwards. And by doing so, he'll be poter himself from trumot masrot. So in order to avoid that problem, we say that you're chayav midrabanan. Even if the goy does miruach hakri, you still are chayav, because we don't want people using that as a mechanism to get out of their chiyuv, trumot, and masrot. Now, you could easily see how the two reasons would end up then the gzeira would be different. If you think the gzeira is because you're purchasing from a non-Jew, then it wouldn't matter whether it was the non-Jew's produce all the way along, or whether it was a Jew's produce that was sold to the goy. In either case, if the meiruach was done in the hands of the goy, and you would be patur midoraita, the rabbanan imposed and said you are chayav, because we don't want you to make the mistake, according to Rashi, according to Rav Beinu Gershom, make the claim to fool others, that you bought it from a goy and you are patur, and therefore when you buy it from Yisrael, you're also patur. On the other hand, if you think the problem is that they are going to sell the Jew's grain to the Ovi Kuchavim, and then the Ovi Kuchavim is going to process it, and then he'll buy it back, then the gzera would only really be necessary in a case where it was originally a Jew's produce sold to a goy. But if it was a goy's produce all along, there'd be no reason to make a gzera because there's no chashash that you're selling it in order to be patur. It was the goy's produce, and that's why he's patur. And there'd be no reason to make a gzerat chachamim in that case. From the surface, that would be the distinction that you would make based on the two reasons that are given here. Although Tosafot, the last Tosafot on the Amud here, Divrei Matzil gzera, suggests that that's not the case, and the gzera is equally applicable. Even if you believe that the problem is selling it to a goy, it's irrespective of whether it was originally owned by a Jew or originally owned by a goy. In both cases, the chamim are gozer that you have to give trumot and masrot from iruach ha-goy. Even though by the case where the goy owned it all along, the chok hashash doesn't exist, nevertheless, Tosafot says that the ein lomar, dehani mile, kishay mitkilato shel Yisrael, don't say that the case where the gzera applies is where Jews sold it to a non-Jew. But it was owned all the way along by the goy, that's no gzera. That is not true. Because we even apply this din to a ger who's converting, where there's no chashash. We apply the din, and he's no different than an Ovi Kuchavim all the way along. Since we apply it across the board, irrespective of how the Meruach got to the hands of Ovi Kuchavim, whether it was his all along, or whether it was a Jew who gave it over to him. From there you see that there is no difference, although you could have thought, without this Baalei Tosafot, that there might be such a nafkamina between the two reasons given by Rashi. Where it says, Iochi. If that's true, that we have a Zera in place for a miruach obeid kochavim to tell you you're chayav. So even those that think you're patur midoraita from miruach obeid kochavim, over here they're going to think you are chayav midrabanan. Afilu chalanami. Why don't you put the same zera in place for chala? By chala you have the same problem. The Jew will work the whole process. Right before he does the kneading, he'll sell it to the goy to poter himself from the din of chala. So why aren't we worried about that over there? So here you said that chala is patur, but the grains are chayav. But both of them are patur midoraita, and by the grains you're saying the reason you're chayav is a gzera de rabbanan. Why is there no gzera de rabbanan by chala? It says, efshar da'afila pachot v'chashmeshet revayim kemach vod. He will bake it, or he'll make the dough at less than the threshold to be chayav in chala. So an individual can be poter themselves from chala even without selling it to a goy. He just has to bake it, or he has to work it, knead it, at quantities below the level of the chiyuv. And in that way, he'll be patur from chala. So he doesn't have to sell it to a goy. He has a better way to deal with it. Mar says, truma nami. Wait a minute, by truma, you also have ways to get out of being chayav in truma. So why then do you need a gzera by goy if you have other methods to do it? Efshar David lak Rabbi Yoshaya. He can do it like Rabbi Yoshaya. Dama Rabbi Yoshaya. Ma'arim adam al tuvato. Umachnisa b'motzsela. A person can do this trick in order to get himself out of being chayav in trumot masrot, which is that he can bring the grains into his house while the shells are still on it or while it's still in the stalk. Kadesh te bemto ochelet uptura min amaser, in order that his animal can eat it, and it'll be patur min amaser. Inami, the other option is, the ayala derka goat, the derka prifot, that he brings it in through the roof, or he brings it in through the backyard. The Gemara over here is explaining that the requirements in order to be chayav in trumot masrot are, number one, meiruach hakri, which is the finishing of the processing out in the field, and then you need the next stage, which is called re'iat Then you bring it into the house. Now that din might be different depending on what your intent is for the grains. If you intend to sell the grains, it might be enough. Miruach HaKri might be the end of the process, and you might be chayav automatically at that point when you get to Miruach HaKri. Nevertheless, if you do want to bring it into your house and use it in your house, then you have to have what's called Riat Pnei Abayit. It has to see the house, the face of the house. Seeing the face of the house is that it has to be brought in, first of all, through the front door. That's Pnei Abayit, the face of the house. In the normal way that you would enter into the house. And number two is you have to bring it into the house at the point where it's already fully processed. Meaning that you've reached the point of Meruach HaKri. So in essence, the two heterim that they're trying to discuss over here are a failure in one of those two items. Derech Gagot and Derech Karpifot is that you brought it into the house, even though it was after Meruach HaKri, you didn't bring it in Pnei Abayit. You didn't bring it in through the front entrance. You brought it through the back door. You brought it through the roof. And that makes you Patur from Tumot HaMasrot. Because you didn't have Riat Pnei Abayit. The other option is that you didn't do Miruach HaKri. You didn't finish the processing. You walked it through the front door, but when you brought it in, it wasn't finished being processed. So then again, you are Patur, because the Riat Pnei Abayit has no impact because of the fact that it was not fully processed. There was no Miruach HaKri before you brought it into the house. The Baal Tosafot here discuss, once you have that Patur, how lasting is that Patur? Does that mean that once you bring it into the house in this manner, that it will never be chayav in Trumot HaMasrot, it's mufka from Trumot HaMasrot? Or do we say that as long as you have it in the house in this manner, it'll be patur, but if you process it in the house and finish it up and then take it out and bring it back in again, maybe you'll be chayav. In addition, he quotes from Rashi in the Gemara in Nida, where Rashi says the reason that it says over here that he brings it in its shell or in its stalk, so that his animal can eat it. As Rashi points out, because animals eating is classified as achilat arai, where you're eating something in a snacky way, not in a way where you're koveya suda, you sit down and you eat. So that happens to have impact with regards to tevel, or items that you have in the field. When you pick items in the field, technically they're not chayav in Trumot HaMasrot until you reach the point of the final process. They may ruach hakri, or whatever is the final process for each of these different items that you bring in. The Mishnayot and Trumot and Masrot discuss what those finishing processes are. But until you reach that point, you're not chayav. Chazal came along and said that you're not allowed to eat achilat keva. You can't eat anything where you have a fixed meal or a full meal from these items prior to the time that you take off, by the time that they reach the Gemar Malacha, prior to the time that they reach that process by which makes you chayav. Because I instituted that so people wouldn't then play games and eat an achilat keva before the Gemar Malacha in order not to be chayav. What so they said is that you can eat achilat arai, you cannot eat achilat keva. That's a takanat chachamim with regards to tevel until it reaches the point of Gemar Malacha. Once you reach the point of Gemar Malacha, not only are you now restricted in achilat keva, you're also restricted in achilat arai. And it's a problem midoraita. You now have a chiyuv Trumot HaMasrot. You can't eat it from it whatsoever. What Rashi points out is that Rav Hoshaya's din over here, and you bring it in b'motshela to the house, all it does is causes the status quo to persist. The status quo is you're not allowed to eat achilat keva. You can only eat achilat arai. So you bring it into the house in that way, you're poter yourself from having to be chayav in Trumot HaMasrot, midoraita. You also do not change the status from being mutar barai asur bechilat keva to being asur and everything. And that's how the status remains. And that's why you can only feed it to your animal. Because as the Gemara says, that achilat bemto is considered arai all the time. That's not considered to be a permanent meal. That's considered to be arai usage of the grains or whatever it is that you're bringing in. So Rashi claims that the reason it uses achilat bemto is to teach you that arai is mutar, keva is asur. And that is that the status of the grains, like they were in the field, now persist even after you brought them in the house, even after they've had riat pnei abayit. The Baal Tosafot discussed this in great detail as to whether that's really the case. And he quotes from the Rabbeinu Ephraim, who says, Mitokach deladam atzo nami shari. He says that if you do it like Rav Hoshaya, not only is it mutar to your animal, it's mutar to the adam. Ubeham tov denakat. So then why did it mention Beima? The fish in Darkol Arim, the Lashon Hazeh. Because that's how what he tells other people he's doing this. He's bringing in for his animal. Because he's too embarrassed to say he's doing it for himself to get out of Trumot and Masrot, and that's going to eat it himself. So in order to dismiss the questions of a people as what he's doing, he tells them that he's bringing it in for his animal, and it's only Achilat Arai. So what is Rabbeinu Ephraim going to do with the fact that while it's in the field, it's Asur B'Achilat Keva? That's only when it can come into being Chayav. It can no longer ever become chayav in Trumot HaMasrot, and because of that, it is also now mutar for achilat keva. According to Rabbeinu Ephraim, the takanat chachamim was only that you can't eat achilat keva because then you'd be cheating out of getting to the gemar melocha where you will be chayav to give Trumot HaMasrot. So we don't want you eating fixed and big meals of this stuff prior to the Gemar Malocha, because then you're avoiding paying the Trumot HaMasrot. But if you get to a point where you're going to be patur from Trumot HaMasrot anyway, because you brought it into the house, you processed it in the house, there's no longer any chance that this item is going to be Chayav in Trumot HaMasrot, then also the Takanat Chachamim falls away. Because you're eating Achilat Keva, you're not going to change anything. If you eat it here, Achilat Keva, you don't eat Achilat Keva, either way it's going to be patur from Trumot HaMasrot. Therefore, the Baal Tosafot quote from the Rabbeinu Ephraim that maybe over here the Beim Toh Ochelet is not the only case where you can eat it, which is Arai, but rather it's the excuse that he uses to do it this way in order to get into his house and be Patur Mi Trumot Umasrot. Though the Baal Tosafot back away from that position of the Rabbeinu Ephraim and in the end seem to go along with what Rashi explained. It's only a heter to eat it Arai and to give it to his animal, but not Achilat Keva, and then he spends time explaining why that would be the case, or what's really the question of the Gemara over here. Because he's not really benefiting himself. He's saying, oh, we don't need a Takana, because you could get out of the Chiyuv of Trumot Masrot even without selling it to a Goy. But there's a big difference. You sell it to a Goy, you're Patur Legamrei. You bring it into your house in the way of Rabbi Shaya, you're only Mutar B'Achilat Arai, you're not Mutar B'Achilat Keva. So then Tosfot has to explain how the Gemara works based on that, given the fact that it's not exactly a tour like the Ovei Kochavim, or it's not up to the level of the tour of an Ovei Kochavim. Tosfot also notes that Vim Tomar, Heichan Matzinu Tevel Dasur Ba'anah. Where do we ever find that Tevel is Asur Ba'anah that you have to say over here that it's Behema can't eat it? He says, V'yesh Lomar, that we learn it out from the parallel that is drawn between Truma Tmeah and Truma Tehorah. And he says that the parallel between them teaches you that ma truma Torah in the chabayla mishat harama ve'elech, that you're only allowed to use truma Torah from the time that it's taken off. Af trumat me'ah kein. So too trumat me'ah is also only about to be used, haino hadlaka, to use by the kohen. V'hadar gamrin in Torah mitme'ah, the mitzar ba'hadlaka, kodem harama. And then we learn the other way. So we learn from truma Torah to trumat me'ah. Just like Trumat Torah, you're only allowed to eat it once you take off Trumot and Masrot. Once you've taken off the Trumot from the Tevel, so too, Trumat Me'ah is only allowed to be burnt once you separate it away from the Tevel. But also, you learn from that even Hana'ah, you're not allowed to get from Tevel until you separate it out, because Trumat Me'ah is all Hana'ah, not Achilah. And that is true, as Tosafot says, back now to Trumat Torah. Just like Trumat Me'ah, there's no Hana'ah from Tevel, so too by Trumat Torah, there's no Hana'ah by Tevel. And that's why over here, you'd be Asur Ba'ana'ah if you were not to bring it into the house in this manner that's Mafkiyo from the Trumot HaMasrot, because any Hana'ah, Klaya, any Hana'ah that eliminates the item completely, which includes the eating of your animals, that would not be allowed if it were not for the fact that you did it through the Din of Rabbi Shaya, because it would be Tevel otherwise, and Tevel is Asur Ba'ana'ah according to the Baalei HaTosafot. So now we have a question from the Gemara, which is, by the case of Meiruach Ovei Kochavim, where your Patur Chamim came in and were gozer to be Chayav because Balei Kisin, yet they didn't do it by Chala. The Gemara says the reason they didn't do it by Chala is because you have another alternative. You could just bake less than the threshold amount and you'd be Patur from Chala. So the guy doesn't need to go to the Goy, he could do it himself, so there's no reason to make the Gzerah. The Gemara says you have the same options by Trumat HaMasrot. You can do these machinations of Rabbi Shaya, or not coming through the front door, and you can make yourself patur. It says, Hotam bin Faresya Zilabe Milta. Over there, it's in public, and therefore it is embarrassing to him. Or it's a denigration of his standing. Halcha bitzina lo zilabe milta. Over here, it's done quietly in a private manner where he doesn't worry about it. So when it comes to the dough, if he does the dough or bakes the dough at less than the threshold amounts, nobody really knows. Nobody really has any idea what's going on. And he can do it inside of his house. So therefore, he's willing to do that in order to be patur from challah, and he doesn't need to sell it to the goy. On the other hand, if he uses the suggestion of Rabbi Chaya, or he uses bringing it in, not through the front door, that's something all his neighbors are going to see him doing. And they're going to know that he's doing this to get out of the chiyub of Trumot and Masrot, and he's going to be embarrassed to do this, because it looks like he's trying to cheat the system and not be chayav in Trumot and Masrot. So therefore, he'd rather go to the goy, where it's a quiet transaction, and he sells it to the goy and buys it back from the goy without anybody knowing, and then that way he can make himself patur, mi trumot and masrot, rather making some sort of public demonstration, which does get him out of trumot and masrot, but then everybody in the world knows that he's trying to do that, he's cheating the kohanim and the levim and the aniim, all the recipients out of their trumot and masrot, by doing this manner, making himself patur. So that's why, by the selling to obey kuchavim for meiruach, they had to put in a takana, because that was a more likely solution to be used to get out of Trumot HaMasrot. Whereas by challah, they didn't put it in place because you have easier and more discreet ways to get out of the field, which is just to knead it and bake it at lower than threshold amounts, where you would not be chayav in challah. Alright, so now the Gemara continues with the processing of the Minchat HaOmer. The truth is that all the processes that we discussed till now were the processes that were done at night with the Ktzirat HaOmer. Now, we're moving on to the things that are processed during the day, which are the making of the mincha, and that is something that's not done at night, but rather during the day, and that might explain why the Mishnayot are broken up. The other thing to note over here is that, for some reason, this Mishnah brings the processes that you need to do in order to make the mincha, but they're out of order. And numerous things here are out of order, and even the Machlokot and the Rishonim seem to point out that that problem exists. And you can see that in the Od Gimel of the Shita Mekubetzet, where he says, Yatzako Balal, Shalot Yisidram Taninu, Shrei Blila Haita, Tchila V'Acharkach Yitzika. You can see that already, that it's clear that it's out of order. And therefore they are arguing about what exactly is taking place here. So Balal Yisaron. He takes the Yisaron, which is the fine barley flour that he created, Benatan Shmano Ulevanoto. He puts in the Shemen and the Lebona, Yatzak Ubalau. He pours it on and he mixes it. So now, the way that Rashi learns it over here is, Shekein Derech Kol HaMenachot, All Menachot Shenotein Shemen Tchila B'Kli. You put in the Shemen first, then you put in the flour, V'Chozer V'Yotzek Aleh Shemen, and then you pour on top of it Shemen again, Ubalel, and then you mix it up. So that's what Rashi reads over here, that Natan Shmano means that you put the oil, you oiled the pan, or the utensil that you're going to use for the kneading of the mincha. Then you put the flour in. Then, yatzak, you put oil on top of it, ubalau, and you mix it up. According to Rashi, the only thing that's out of order over here is the levona. Levona is not put into the mincha until you're finished with the whole making of the mincha, and then you put the levona on the side. Over here, that's the levona too early. The Baal Tosafot point out that we're going to see later on in the Masechta that there are actually three times that you have to put oil into a mincha. Rashi mentions two of them. The Baal Tosafot say there really are three, and he thinks all three here are mentioned in the Mishnah. Happens to be they're maybe out of order, but they're all mentioned in the Mishnah. And that is that you have one requirement to oil the pan before you start. There's another requirement to put oil on top of the mincha before you mix it. And then there's a third requirement of a yitzika, which is to, once it's already made into a dough, is to pour oil on top of it again. He says that Rashi only mentioned two of them. But Tosafot says, I think all three of them are found in the Mishnah. And that is, he says, Natan Shmano is putting the oil into the pan beforehand. Yatzak is the oil at the end that you pour on top of the dough that's finished. Balal is pouring of the oil to make it into a mixture. Therefore, he says, there are really three Matnot Shemen over here. And again, they're not in order. Natan Shmano is the first oil that's put down. Then the Yisaron is put in. Then the Balal. Then you put in oil and mix it. And then you get tzak is the oil that's put on all the way in the end. So again, Tosafot takes the Mishnah out of order to get all those three processes in. But it is not unprecedented with that because the word Levona is mentioned too early in the Mishnah as well. So he says that the Mishnah doesn't necessarily have everything in order over here. Then Hanif Ve'gish, that we already learned in the previous parak, that the Minchat Omer requires both Hanafa, a wave offering, and Hagasha, touching it to the corner of the Mizbeach. Kamatz, he takes off the Kometz from it. Now, the Levona is at this point in the Mincha. He takes off the Kometz and puts it into a Kli Sharet. And he takes the Levona and puts it into a Kli Sharet, whether it has to be together with the Kometz or not. We saw that Machloket between the Gemara here and the Gemara in other places as to whether the Kometz and the Levona are put together. Ve'iktir. And then you put it on the Mizbeach. The Bali Tosfot just point out that there are other things missing from it. He says, how come it doesn't talk about melach, salting it, which you have to do before you put it onto the Mizbeach, like it did in the previous parak it mentioned to us. Why don't you take off a kometz, you salt it, and then put it on the Mizbeach. Bashar nechal lekohanim. And the remainder of it, the sherei minchat omer, are eaten by the kohanim. Mishikareva omer. Once the omer is brought, yotzim umotzim shuk Yerushalayim, or the other girsa was shukei Yerushalayim, you find the marketplaces of Yerushalayim, shumalei kemach kali. It is full of roasted flour, shelo bitzon chachamim, which was not pleasing to the chachamim, divi Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir thinks there's a huge problem here. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, bitzon chachamim ayuosim, that they did it with the acquiescence of the chachamim. As to what the problem is that the shukei Yerushalayim are full of flour, right at the moment that the omer is brought, shows you that people were processing it prior to that point in time. That means that these were good businessmen. They wanted to be ready. As soon as Chadash was allowed to be bought, they wanted to have their produce ready to sell. So as soon as the Omer was done, they had it all laid out and ready to sell. So that means they clearly processed it beforehand. Rabbi Meir says that Shalom Bertzon Chachamim, what was it that they were upset about? The Rambam says in the Perashat Mishnayot, Shem Ish Lechu Yad, V'yochlu Mimenu Kodem Hakrava, Uleficha Kamar Shalom Bertzon Chachamim. The fear is that if we allow you to process it beforehand, you might come to eat from the chadash before the omer is brought. If you allow someone to do a whole processing and make it into flour to an edible state, then they are going to eat it even before the omer is brought, or they might eat it before the omer is brought, and that's the chashash over here. Others, like Rashi and the Rabbeinu Gershom, suggest that the problem is not only the fact that you may come to eat it, but the mere fact that you're doing ktsira before ktsira to omer, which we'll see in a second in the Gemara, that it seems to me that Ktsira Omer has to be the first Ktsira that's done. So over here, how do you have Ktsira that's done before Ktsira Omer? And that's what upset the Chachamim, according to Rabbi Meir. So Gemara says, V'lo gazar Rabbi Yehuda, dimaati lemeichel mine. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't worry about the fact that when you interact with Isur, that you might come to eat from it. Biraminu, what about with regards to Bir Chametz? Omer, Budkim, or Arbasar? The proper time to do B'dika and Biur is on the night of the 14th. Ula ba'abar sar shacharit. If you didn't do it at night, you do it on the morning of Erev Pesach. Ube shata Biur. If you don't do it in the morning, you can do it up to shata Biur. According to this, is the time that you burn it, meaning up to the sixth hour. Now, beyond that point, Rabbi Yehuda does not allow you to do B'dika and Biur anymore, because he's afraid if you find the chametz, that you might come to eat it. B'chomim armim, lo badak. It continues on, the way that the Mishnah continues, lo badak b'tochomoyed, komar b'moyed sreifato. Rashi says, the meaning of b'tochomoyed, if you didn't check during the moed, which is the time that it was burnt, then you b'doch l'achar ha-moed. Then you will check after the moed, meaning on Pesach itself. The chomim are not worried about the fact that he's going to come to eat it. The Bali Tosafot don't love Rashi's explanation of that to come over there, because why did it change between Leshnon of Rabbi Yehuda, where he calls the sixth hour Shata Biur, and the Rabbanan call it the Moed? So he says, Lekach nira the Moed mamash kamar, toch yimei Pesach. So that means that Moed means that you do it during Pesach. If you didn't do it during Pesach, you can do it even after Pesach. So according to the Shita over there, that there's a Knas for Chomet Shavar Lava Pesach. Therefore, if you didn't eliminate it during Pesach, you eliminate it after Pesach. But you have to do a B'dika. The Chomim allow you to do a B'dika without worrying about the fact that you're going to come to eat it. Rabbi Yehuda cuts you off at the Zman Isur Chametz because he's afraid that if you can interact with it, you're going to come to eat it. So now Gemara says, Amar Rabba, Shani Chadash, Tosh Lohu Tartalo, Eliadei Kituf Zachur Hu. Chadash is different because the only way you're allowed to make Chadash before the Ktzira Ta'omer is to take it off by hand. You can't harvest it in the normal way because Ktzira Kodama Omer is a surah. Doing the Ktzira of your field before Ktzira Ta'omer is problematic. So that forces you then to do the harvesting in a hand method. And that hand method then will lead you to remember that you shouldn't eat it. By chametz, you don't have any heker. So Amalei Abaye, Tinaf, Tzira. That works well for the harvesting. Tchina v'har kadah, ma'ika the meimar. What about the milling and the sifting of it? How is there a difference over there? How is there a shinoi over there? Halo kasha, that's not a problem. Tchina berechaya diyada. He does the milling in a hand mill rather than a water mill. Harkada gabe nafa. And he does the sifting, not inside the sifter, but rather he turns the sifter upside down. He does it on the back of the sifter. So in that way he does the shinui in all the processes. And then he'll remember that it's chodosh and he can't eat from it. So there's something that's identifiable along the way that reminds him that this is not for eating prior to the Omer. And that's why it's permitted over here according to Rabbi Yehuda. Whereas by chametz, where there's no heker, there we're worried about you eating the chametz. Gemara says, Beit HaShlachim, Disharya Ktzira. What about the fact that you have irrigated fields that you can do Ktzira before Ktzira Tomer? Because Rashi notes over here, Kaven the Sadeh Yveh Shahi, since the irrigated fields are dry fields, Imishaula Lachar Bishula Azla Le'ibud. If you leave it there in their stalks too long, it's going to dry out and it's going to get ruined. So it's too risky to leave it out in an irrigated field because you actually might lose the whole crop. So there you're allowed to do the Ktzira before the Omer. That's the first Lashon that Rashi brings. The second Lashon that Rashi brings is Ra'otain. Those that come from irrigated fields are of a lower quality. Vein Omer Ba'mehem. And the Omer cannot be brought from them because they are a lower quality. And since the Omer can't be brought from them, there's no Isur Ktzira. Because the place that you can bring the Omer from, that has a restriction against harvesting it prior to the Omer. But some from a place where you cannot bring the Omer from, there's no restriction. And Rashi says, Lashon ze ikar. Rashi says that is the proper explanation. He likes the second explanation better. The only thing that's interesting about that is Rashi on Ayin Aleph, Amud Aleph, by the Mishnah that discusses this, Beit HaShlachim, which we're about to quote, he says, over there, Mipnei Shemafsidin Maher. He brings that it's because they get lost very easily. And also the Ra'ot. Over here he makes it clear that he favors the explanation of Ra'otain, yet when he explains the Mishnah, he also brings both explanations down. And over there he doesn't make the notation that he likes the second one better, but actually brings both of them down. It's just interesting that after he declares over here that the Flashon is Ikar, why by the Mishnah does he bring both of them later on in the Masechta? Nevertheless, there's a Mishnah that's not Kotzrim Beit HaShlachim Shiba Makim. You're allowed to harvest the irrigated fields in the valleys of Alo Gotshim, but you're not allowed to make them into Gdisha to pile them up. And Tosfos points out, somewhat relying on that first explanation of Rashi, that the reason they allowed for the Ktzira and not the Gdisha is because there was a huge loss if they didn't harvest it, but the Gdisha would not cause a monetary loss, and therefore they said you can harvest it, but you can't be Godesh, you can't be piling it up. Tosfos points out over here that even though lechatchila you're not allowed to bring from these irrigated fields, b'diavad, if you do bring it, it is still kasher, they still call it a makom shiatami vi karin and bay. We still call it from a place that you wouldn't bring it, and therefore it doesn't have the restriction of ktsira before the ktsira to omer. So even though it's b'diavad, still kasher, we don't classify it as being a primary place, and therefore the restriction doesn't apply to that location. Ma'ika the meimer. Over there, there's no shinoi. Over there, you're doing ktsira in a regular manner, and you cannot eat from that grain prior to the Omer. But where's there a shinoi that gives you a heker or a reminder that you're not allowed to eat from the chodosh? El Amar Abaye, the answer is chodosh bedilmine. Chodosh people are separated from; they distance themselves from it. Chametz lo bodomine. On the other hand, chametz people do not separate themselves from it. That's the difference because chadash has been asur all along till now. You weren't allowed to eat chadash from whenever these greens were ready to be harvested, or whenever the new produce came out, all the way till the Omer. So a person never experienced the heter of Chadash, so they won't think to eat the Chadash until the Omer comes. On the other hand, by Chametz, which is mutar all year round, and is only asur on Pesach, over there, the person is used to eating Chametz. So then if he's going to search for the Chametz, he may come to eat it, because he's not used to being separated away from the Chametz. Now the Chachamim obviously disagree and say, if his whole purpose is search and destroy, then of course he's going to remember that not to eat it, because the only thing he's doing is looking for it in order to eliminate it. So he's looking to eliminate it, he's not going to come to eat it. But Rabbi Yehuda says, because he's so used to eating Chametz, if he finds the Chametz, he might come to eat it. But that explained the difference in Rabbi Yehuda's position with regards to Chametz, where he is Choshesh, that you might eat it, because that is lo bedil minei. People are not separated from it, they eat it all year long. Whereas Chadash, where they are bedil minei, he doesn't worry about people eating it, and therefore he allows for the processing of it, even prior to the bringing of the Omer. Okay, we're going to stop here, 8 lines down on the top of Samachet Amud Aleph. And tomorrow we'll continue with understanding why the Rabbanan's position is different by Chametz than it is by the Omer. Just like we explained the difference in Rabbi Yehuda, we'll have to explain the difference in the Rabbanan's position as well.